This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined as always here in the early portion of the week by the one and only Adam Burke. The first weekend in November led to some wackiness in the ACC, some bad beats. We got a whole lot to get to. Another head coaching fired in the SEC, so a whole bunch to get to. But most importantly, Maction starts this week. Weekday Maction. Everybody is fired up for that. We get our first revealing of the college football playoff rankings. Adam, there's a lot to unpack from this weekend. It didn't on paper look like a star-studded weekend, but there were just kind of some weird and wacky things that unfolded. And for me, I think number one is what the hell is going on in the ACC? You've got a Virginia team that I think many people know where I stand on Virginia. We will get to the bad beat as the show goes on. They're the only unbeaten left in conference play, despite the fact that they lost to NC State. But don't worry, that was a non-conference game. You've got Duke winning a game with a 6.1 post-game win expectancy. I know a lot of people that I have a lot of people in my life that have a Duke ticket to win the ACC, so I'm not mad at them for it, but you got that going on. Miami does what Miami always does. They lose as a double-digit favorite. Georgia Tech gets pummeled by NC State, so it's a power conference, man, but good God, it is weird and wild, and who knows how this thing's going to play out here over the final month of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a power conference in name only, I guess, right? man, I mean, like, Pitt is 5-1 in this conference, and I don't think that they're very good either.
So, they got a lot of injuries, too. Their bye week comes at a very good time.
Yeah.
But think about Pitt real quickly. Sorry to interrupt. You've got Notre Dame in 2 weeks at Georgia Tech, home to Miami. I mean, there's a reality where Pitt's wrapping up the season with three straight losses.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, whoever emerges from this dumpster fire is not really going to deserve to be in the college football playoff. God, I hope it's Virginia, because I would love to pick against them.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Georgia Tech, man. I mean, Haynes King throws for four bills and you still lose by double digits. Like, I don't know what the hell happened to their defense in that game against NC State. By the way, I don't even know what NC State is this season, but somehow two of their wins are Virginia and Georgia Tech. So I don't know. I mean, this conference is just it's nuts. And then like my one other thing, not that this is related to the college football playoff at all or anything like that. How awful is Syracuse? Oh, man. Ever since Steve Angeli went down, like, you or I would do better playing quarterback.
Well, they started a walk-on who plays lacrosse. And it was one of those games, Adam, where I was looking at that point spread on Friday night, and I think Syracuse closed around a one-point favorite. And I get it. It's UNC. But UNC, you know, hold your jokes. They've actually been playing better football since the bye week. They should have beat Cal. Mm-hmm. They fumble going into the end zone. They get the cover. They should have beat Virginia. Had a post-game win expectancy north of 50%. They go for two, which I agree with. The play call sucked. And then, you know, they go up to Syracuse and they face whatever that garbage was. So, you know, I'm feeling good about my Syracuse win total under 5.5. So, you know, we should be able to cash that in their next game. I believe they play Miami next. So, yeah, Syracuse, a great story a year ago. One injury kind of changes everything for Syracuse moving forward. But I want to just kind of air it out real quickly with a couple of the endings that happened. And I'm not going to rant and rave. No one likes to hear that type of stuff. But let's start with Georgia, Florida. And you got the fired coach bump. Georgia gets the win 24-20. And I know a lot of people were very happy, or a lot of people were very upset, depending on what side you were on, as Gunnar Stockton took the knee at the one-yard line. A couple things about that play. First, I'll just say this. I did not have a full game bet, so I was not invested in this game. I had Florida first half, which was able to cash. It was the right football play by Gunnar Stockton. But I also am not surprised that it happened, because if you think back to the Auburn game, where, of course, I was on Auburn as he leapt into the end zone and he could have taken a knee, Kirby Smart reamed him out on the sidelines. So you knew if this opportunity arose again, it was going to be a situation where he would take a knee. I actually think the right side got home. I thought Florida catching seven was probably the right side throughout the game. Curious your thoughts on that ending, and I guess big picture too on Georgia, as now the Bulldogs, they sit at 7-1, Adam. They've got Texas still remaining on the schedule. They wrap up the season against Georgia Tech. Assuming they go 3-1 down the stretch, Georgia is a lock to be in the playoff and probably hosting a playoff game.
Yeah, it's certainly what it looks like. And look, I mean, you know, I wonder, right, if Georgia was in a different situation and kind of needed some style points. Is that what they do? Or do they try to win this game by 11 and, you know, maybe make it look a little bit better? But right football play, and as you said, I mean, there was an example of this already this season, and Gunnar Stockton, you know, took a verbal beating from Kirby Smart. So not a big surprise. Honestly, I played Georgia already this week, -7.5 against Mississippi State. I know this one opened 9.5, DraftKings. I have it 11 personally. But, like, if they win the game 31-20, like, do they open 10.5 against Mississippi State? But just because Gunnar Stockton knelt at the 2-yard line, like, kind of changed the complexion of that line. And even some people coming in on Mississippi State, which I don't really like that side in this game. But, yeah, I mean, it was definitely the right play. And yeah, I mean, Georgia's a team that, you know, the back-and-forth game against Alabama where they kind of started a little bit slow, got hit in the mouth a little bit, and then we're the better team probably for the last three quarters, I would say, of that game. That's their only loss. I mean, they beat Ole Miss. They probably shouldn't have beaten Tennessee, but they did. They're going to beat Texas, and I think they'll beat Georgia Tech, too. So, yeah, I think Georgia's going to be in good shape when they get to the playoff.
Yeah, Texas is pretty interesting now moving forward. So, Georgia, by the way, if you're looking at the market to make or miss the playoff, -550 to make the playoff right now. Of the teams on the board, they have the third shortest odds. Indiana, Ohio State, not on the board currently because they are pretty much in Sharpie to make the college football playoff, barring, I don't even know, I can't even think of the scenario where those two teams, I mean, Ohio State could lose to Michigan, you're still getting in the playoff.
Yeah, but they better not.
I don't envision that happening, but I know I didn't envision it happening last year. If you do think Georgia trips up, they're 4-1 to miss the playoff. Let's talk Texas, because you and I last week really liked Texas here early on the podcast. That ultimately came home. There was window dressing, backdoor cover based off of the closing number on Vanderbilt and Texas. Texas was impressive, in my opinion, in that game. And now they're kind of the undertaker coming out of the grave right now when you think about their playoff chances. They're still an underdog to make the playoff at this point because they go to Georgia in 2 weeks. They have to play Texas A&M. You know, I know Stuart Mandel put it in his column. Is there a chance that Texas, with three losses, winning one of those two games gets in? I don't think it's crazy, considering Oklahoma's playing better now. They just beat Vanderbilt, so they do have a couple of good wins. I know good losses aren't really a thing, but Notre Dame fans like me are saying, oh, look, good loss, good loss. I mean, losing by seven on the road at Ohio State, is that a good loss now? I know at the time we thought, you know, it was surprising, but now you look at that defense. I think Texas, if they're, and it's a big if, I'm not saying they are, because they're home against A&M at Georgia, and they have Arkansas, which we can discuss that dumpster fire of program, whatever it is, a little bit. But Texas has got a shot here, man, to make the playoff. And I don't think anyone wants to see it, but that win on Saturday kind of kept them alive, certainly talking about making the college football playoff.
You know, I'm really interested to see, you know, what happens tomorrow night, Tuesday night, when we get our first college football playoff rankings and see kind of how Vanderbilt is graded, because yeah. I really don't think that they're that good of a football team, right? They certainly weren't a top 10 caliber football team like they were over the weekend. I mean, Diego Pavia's numbers really aren't that great. In fact, they were actually pretty good in the game against Texas, but again, a lot of that in garbage time. But I don't think this Vanderbilt team is really all that good. I think a lot of people just kind of got swept up in the narrative of like, hey, this team is really fun. Diego Pavia, underdog roles, you know, all this kind of thing. And like people just kind of overranked them in the top 25. I don't really think that they're that good of a football team. So I'm curious to see how that win actually gets graded for Texas. Because, again, I mean, Vandy, like, nothing against Alabama. LSU is just not a very good team at all. And of course, they fired Brian Kelly. Missouri, the quarterback got hurt in that game. Like, the South Carolina win is not aging well for Vanderbilt at all whatsoever, although they finally fired Mike Shula, which was about 8 weeks overdue. I just don't think that Vanderbilt's body of work and the metrics are super impressive on this team. So I'm curious to see how that Texas win does get graded.
Yeah, Vanderbilt right now per Sagarin is 14th in the country. So, yeah, we've got a lot of these two-loss SEC teams kind of hanging out there. And, you know, the ACC, we kind of ran through this scenario last week of the likelihood of it being a two-bid conference. Well, when Miami loses and Georgia Tech loses, let me double-check if the odds have come out yet. Because I know DraftKings has had how many teams will make the playoff. They don't have it up yet. And I imagine they won't have it up until after the playoff rankings are revealed. But outside of Georgia Tech beating Georgia in the regular season finale, I don't see how this is a two-bid league. You know, there was a lot of scenarios, Adam. You could have played a scenario where this was a three-bid league last week, where Georgia Tech ran the table, beats Georgia, loses to someone in the ACC championship. Miami goes 11-1. But with that Miami loss, and I'm sure that's going to get all people fired up on Tuesday night, because Miami, I can almost guarantee you, is going to be behind Notre Dame now because of their two losses, even though they beat the Irish in that season opener down in Miami. It is hard for me to envision even a scenario where we get two teams in out of the ACC outside of Georgia Tech turning things around, beating Georgia, and then losing in the ACC championship.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And then the other question is, who emerges out of the Big 12, right? I mean, I think Texas Tech beats BYU this weekend. They're a big favorite to do so. I think they absolutely do. So BYU would no longer be undefeated. And I mean, I guess they beat Utah, so that's their best win. But Iowa State, man, I don't know what is happening in Ames, but that was pathetic over the weekend out of them. Colorado's bad. The win over West Virginia maybe looks a little bit better because the Mountaineers beat a pretty good Houston team last weekend on the road. But like, is the Big 12 a one bid league? Is it just presumably Texas Tech?
Well, I would say this, if Texas Tech runs the table, it's a one-bid league.
Right. So then how many SEC teams do you get? Four,
well,
five?
I do want to talk a scenario real quickly, because I have a Utah ticket from the offseason, and I essentially lit it on fire. At 6-1, there is a scenario brewing where Utah gets into the Big 12 championship game. And I don't know all the tie breaks off my head, but BYU plays Texas Tech this week, and then in 2 weeks they have to go to Nippert and take on Cincinnati. If they lose to Cincinnati, that has a likelihood of setting up a three-way tie or more for second place, right? Mm-hmm. So that does reopen the possibility for Utah to get in. Utah, I know they lost to BYU. It was a crazy game, turned the ball over a ton. Utah's the second best team in this conference. And I think if they got another crack at Texas Tech, I don't know if they'd beat them, but I think they certainly would have an opportunity the way that they're playing. I mean, that was an absolute ass whooping. And you know, it's one of those situations we joke on the podcast, Adam, where, you know, there's a fine line between genius and jerk, where you look at your record after a weekend of betting. And Utah was one of those situations where I'm kicking myself because I really liked them in that spot. But I didn't want to lay the double digits, so I paired them up with Arkansas like an idiot in a money line parlay. Arkansas does what they do, and they blow it. But Utah was very impressive. I mean, you mentioned it. What were the final numbers for Sorsby, who had been one of the most prolific passers in college football entering Saturday night?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll give him credit because he threw for 221 yards on 11 completions. And one of them was an 88-yard catch and run. So essentially, Sorsby did nothing. 11 of 33, 221, touchdown and a pick. And again, that touchdown was an 88-yard play. So, like, that was basically it for them in that game. And, yeah, I mean, also, you know, for Utah, I mean, they got Devin Dampier back. And he played fine when Bird Ficklin played really well the week before. And this is, you know, this is another team where, like, as you mentioned, there is a path for them to get in the Big 12 championship game. But if they get the opportunity to run it up on Baylor, Kansas State, or Kansas, they are going to. I think Kyle Whittingham is very well aware of the situation here. So, you know, I mean, again, two road games left, Baylor and Kansas. We'll see. But if they get the chance to win by margin, they're going to do it. We've seen that the last 2 weeks already. So that's a team, you know, you got to keep that in mind here late in the season, where sometimes the spread's not even going to matter for these teams that are just trying to put up style points.
Yeah, Texas Tech, I think, Adam, is in pretty good shape to make it to the playoff, regardless of winning the conference. Their one loss coming on the road to Arizona State when they were healthy. You beat BYU this weekend, which both you and I expect them to do. You've got a win over Utah on the road. You've got a win over BYU. If they go into the Big 12 championship 11-1, best case scenario for the Big 12 is for them to lose it. So, you know, the reality is setting in right now, Adam, where we've got a one bid Big 12, a one bid ACC, the group of five, we can get into that. That thing is all over the place. I mean, Matic Madsen goes down with Boise State. They're not probably going to win the Mountain West anymore. They've got a walk-on quarterback right now as their starter, it looks like, moving forward. So who the hell knows who's coming out of the Mountain West? Tulane goes down to UTSA and gets absolutely smashed by UTSA. Then they play Memphis this weekend. I mean, that conference is all over the place. North Texas beats Navy by two touchdowns on Saturday. So the reality is, and the question you had posed, right, how many teams are getting in out of the SEC? Well, if we do the simple math right now, one out of the ACC, more than likely one out of the Big 12 if Texas Tech runs the table, one group of five, Notre Dame decent shape at 10-2 if they win out here with a game against Navy and Pitt looming following that. So that's eight teams. The Big Ten is locked in, it seems like, with three. Could you get five from the SEC? I don't think it's crazy. You just have to avoid total carnage, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, look, I'll say this. Oregon's got a pretty tough road to go here. You know, they're on the road.
I don't think Oregon makes it. I don't.
No?
No, I don't.
You think they lose one of these remaining games?
I do. I think they'll lose. I don't think they'll run the table at Iowa, USC, and Washington. One of those teams is going to beat
them. Hey, you left out Minnesota. Yeah, I mean, it could be Washington.
There's a reason.
Right? I guess it could be.
I mean, I think there's no scenario where the Big Ten doesn't have three teams. But that third team, I think, is pretty fascinating because, you know, Oregon, by the way, and I'm staring at it, they're plus 275 to miss the college football playoff. I don't know. I mean, you know, we'll see how this ultimately plays out. I mean, Lincoln Riley not traveling time zones is, by the way, that came home again. He's now 1-8 ATS in games where he has to travel two or more time zones, 3-12 as a road favorite ATS. I did say that he was complaining about the travel, shockingly, but they won and they beat Nebraska and Dylan Raiola done for the year. So huge loss for Nebraska. But yeah, I mean, you look at this Iowa team at home against this Oregon squad, and then they've got USC and Washington. I don't know, man. I just Dan Lanning's a good coach. He could prove me wrong, but I don't think they're running the table. I think they lose one of these big three games.
Is it this week? Would you take Iowa?
Thought about it. Yeah, 6.5 right now, or is it back down? I think it's down to 5.5. Game of the year, look ahead was 6.5. And we'll get to overreaction or market correction. But yeah, I mean, look, it is worth noting the juggernaut that is Indiana, who did it again over the weekend. They should have lost to Iowa. Like, you know, Iowa got too complacent. They played for a long field goal. They missed the field goal. Then Indiana's able to get the broken coverage touchdown. Iowa has played Indiana the toughest of anyone this year in the country. And Oregon hosted Indiana, as did Iowa. And, you know, Iowa played better against Indiana than Iowa did.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're absolutely right. I don't want to call this a conspiracy theory. I'm not going to. But, you know, I mean, this is another one of those examples, though, of like money talks in college football. Right. If you have the chance to put the big Nike brand in there in Oregon, you know, maybe that's something that people kind of push for. Or, you know, if again, and this scenario is setting up really, really well for your Fighting Irish, too, where they're going to have two losses, but they're going to be from very early on in the season. They're not losing a game the rest of the way. So they're going to go 10-2. They don't have a conference championship game, which we know can't
hurt them. They did on Saturday, Adam. Good God, that was.
They're not. They're not losing.
That was a poop-tastic performance, but they got out of there.
I mean, look, those things are going to happen, you know, especially when you played USC, you know, prior to that, you've kind of played, you played at such a high level that like all of a sudden those types of things are going to happen. Plus, had to be a look ahead spot worrying about Navy and the option and, you know, installing some concepts for that because Boston College is horrible.
And I think they knew that Stormy was on the sideline, so they wanted to give her a good game, you know, and they didn't want to give her a blowout.
Makes sense. By the way, is Boston College going to have a coaching opening as well? Are they going to fire Bill O'Brien?
I don't know, man.
I mean,
here's the thing, too, and I know we're kind of all over the place, but like everyone's getting fired, right? Yeah. You before the start of the podcast, you're like, hey, should Maryland fire Mike Loxley? And I'm like, it makes some sense. The numbers are not great. They had a terrible year a year ago. It was pointed out by Stu Mandel that since 2022, Maryland is 12-2 in August and September and 4-15 in October and November. They are 0-37, as my buddy Al Galdi pointed out on Twitter, against ranked Big Ten teams since 2014. So, yeah, you could make the argument that he should be let go because Indiana hired James Madison's coach and now is number one or number two in the country. And why couldn't Maryland do that? But like, is every school just going to fire their coach? I mean, that's the crazy thing as this all plays out here, Adam, because we saw another firing, as you alluded to in the start of the podcast. Auburn fired Hugh Freeze. You know, Mike Norvell, I know they got a win over Wake Forest. Maybe he can save his job as this down the stretch. Who knows how that plays out? Wisconsin hasn't fired Luke Fickell yet. It seems inevitable. So, like, how many damn jobs are going to be open at the end of the year?
There's going to be a lot of them. You know what? It was I know that Tulane lost to UTSA, but it's been a good couple of weeks for John Sumrall because his agent's going to be able to pick wherever he wants to go and get a giant bag to do so. Same thing for Bob Chesney at James Madison.
James Franklin.
Who's going to hire James Franklin?
He'll have his pick.
What are we thinking here?
I know Bruce Feldman has reported that Virginia Tech really wants James Franklin. I think that would be a really good landing spot for him because you don't need the cash, right? You've got this $50 million buyout. It's offsetting, but you don't need a huge salary.
Right.
And he knows the DMV. He was the coach in waiting at Maryland forever. He went to Vanderbilt, had success at Penn State. If you're Virginia Tech, oh my God, I'd be over the moon about getting James Franklin. If you tell me, if I'm a Hokie fan, if I'm Ryan Kramer, and I'm saying, you give me 9 wins every year and I can't beat, you know, top 10 teams. How many top 10 teams are coming to Blacksburg? I mean, that's
right. Yeah. I mean, with the current state of the ACC, that's a perfect job for him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
that one makes a lot of sense. It really does.
But he could go to the SEC. Could he go to Auburn?
Do you think an SEC athletic department's going to hire him when he can't win a big game against a top 10 team, which is what you have to do in the SEC?
No, I know. But if I'm James Franklin, I mean, I would much rather go to UCLA or Virginia Tech and, you know, maybe a little bit of prep. I'd go to Virginia Tech. I'd be honest. Like, that's the spot I would go to. They have a passionate fan base. You have a pipeline to the DMV. You can be the biggest brand in your state really quickly because Virginia, you know, it is what it is. They're having this fortunate season. But I'd go to Virginia Tech. You've got a great, you know, entrance. You just don't win games following your cool entrance. But I'd go to Virginia Tech if I were James Franklin.
I think so, too. I think that would be a really good spot. Also, like, not for nothing, Sean Lewis at San Diego State. I mean, he's kind of coaching himself into a nice little upgrade here.
Yeah, we need to talk about that game because crazy market movement on San Diego State, Hawaii this week. But San Diego State, man, I did a radio hit with my buddy John Schaefer in San Diego. He's the voice of the Aztecs because they showed up last week on the Make the College Football Playoff odds, Adam. They were 22-1. And now you see Boise, they lose Maddox Madsen for the season. San Diego State is the odds-on favorite now to win the Mountain West. They've only got one loss on the year. Like, it's not crazy to have San Diego State in the discussion to potentially make the college football playoff with everything that's could unfold in the American. And then, you know, James Madison will probably be 12-1 as well, but it's not the craziest thing in the world for San Diego State to potentially make the college football playoff right now.
Well, and that's one too where, you know, I mean, the metrics are really, really strong for this team, right? I mean, they've given up 41 points in their four conference games, 80 points in their eight games overall. They're not really an offense built to run it up necessarily, but maybe that's something that Sean Lewis wants to do going forward if he gets the opportunity, especially if they can do it to Boise State coming up here. Like, that's what I think you need to do, because you know defensively you're going to play well. They got to get through this week's game against Hawaii, which I know you and I both have thoughts on that one. But yeah, you know, if they survive Hawaii and then can blow out Boise State, which looks to be a possibility at this point, that's when I think they start getting a little bit of buzz, because the reality of it is they don't really have a good win, right? I mean, Cal, I guess, is a good win, but Cal is going in the wrong direction here. Mm-hmm. The Washington State loss, I don't know what the hell happened in that game.
How about Washington State losing this weekend?
Yeah, yeah, right? To Oregon State, who, by the way, Oregon State also fired their coach a couple
weeks
ago.
Fired Coach Bump.
So, yeah, there you go. I guess it worked. 10-7, what a thrill. Did you look at the box score for that game? I know we're all over the place, but did you look at the box score?
I'll just say unique quad box. It made the quad box this week because of other circumstances. I kept it on. How about CBS having that game? Hilarious. television. Oregon. Somewhere in this country, Adam, a person who only has bunny ears was forced to watch Oregon State, Washington State on Saturday night.
I mean, you know, you get the bunny ears wrapped in foil and all that. Oregon State wins with 60 total passing yards. And, like, that's cool if you're an option team, but to my knowledge, they are not.
I don't know what they are.
Don't know what they are.
But good for them to get the win in Washington State. Now they've got a bit of an uphill climb to make a bowl game this year. I was just looking at some postgame win expectancies. Oregon State actually had a 55% postgame win expectancy, according to Bill Conley. So yeah, pretty crazy that one.
I think the fact that we're just jumping all over the place here just kind of speaks to what college football is nowadays. You know, like, the elites are elite, the bads are bad, and everything in between is just interchangeable week in and week out.
So to circle back a little bit to the ACC with an upcoming week here, Pitt is off this week. They are a team that certainly could make some noise if they were to pull an upset over Notre Dame. I know that doesn't affect the ACC necessarily, but if they were to beat Notre Dame, I guess that's another possible pathway to multiple bids if the Panthers next week at noon beat the Irish. But the ACC right now, after Georgia Tech loses, taking a look at their odds to win that conference, the favorite is still Georgia Tech plus 280. You've got Duke plus 290, Virginia plus 350, Louisville plus 370. It looked like Louisville was going to do what Jeff Brohm always does, which is lose as a double-digit favorite, but they found a way to win and cover over the weekend. And I just wanted to say this about Duke, and I mentioned it briefly. I mean, I know a couple of our buddies, I think the madman Chris Massaro has a ticket on Duke, and I'm happy for him. I can't figure this Duke team out because every time I bet on them, they shit the bed. But when I don't bet on them, they go and beat Clemson. If you had Duke in that spot or a Duke future, go pray to whatever God you believe in, because that defensive pass interference call at the end of the game was an abomination. Should not have been called. Then Duke scores, gets the two-point conversion. Adam, I'm sure it's happened before. I can't recall seeing a team with a 6% post-game win expectancy to win a game, but that's what happened, and that's kind of the year it's been for Clemson. I mean, Dabo Sweeney, who, you know, he can get animated. Did you see him at the end of the first half? I mean, he was ripping his defense a new one on the sidelines as Duke got a touchdown before the half. But we've talked about Virginia, how fraudulent I think they are, but they're still undefeated in the ACC. Like, de facto, someone has to win this conference. Who would you make a case for right now to win the ACC?
Yeah, just real quick on Dabo. I mean, you know, program in God's name, image and likeness or whatever, and berating his players and going off on the officials, you know, $10,000.
So, rightfully so, I will say.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Couldn't put it on the collection plate at church, though. He had to give $10,000 to the ACC.
The Statso War Parker Fleming, did we really get beat that bad graphic? Clemson very much number one this week in net success rate in the loss.
I think it's got to be Georgia Tech. I mean, they're going to beat Boston College. They're going to beat Pitt at home. The Georgia game doesn't really matter, you know, at least in terms of the ACC. It obviously matters if they want to be the at-large, you know, mm-hmm. college football playoff team. It's got to be Georgia Tech to me. I think Virginia loses one of the next three games, if not two of the next three games. At least I hope so, because I'm so tired of this team. I think it's got to be Georgia Tech.
All right. Before we hit a break, I'm not going to go crazy, but I'll just give you the scenario of me on my patio watching Cal and UVA. So I'll preface it this way. As the week grew on, so my first bet last week was Cal plus the points because, as people know, I am not the biggest believer in Tony Elliott's squad this year. As the week went on, kind of heard some whispers that things maybe weren't super buttoned up in Cal. You looked at some of the numbers and Virginia Tech ran for over, you know, 300 plus yards against them. And then I was listening to our buddy Chris Felica, the Bears podcast, and he mentioned things were a bit off in the locker room there at Cal, too. I'm like, all right, this doesn't feel good. But I still got the ticket. I'm not asking for a refund. So let's see how this thing plays out. So I'm watching this one unfold, and I've got like a little football. I don't know how you watch games, Adam. I kind of just have to be up, and I stand a lot, and I have a football in my hand. And I'm watching this thing play out. And for those who didn't see it, it was 24-21. Virginia was facing a 4th-and-2 from the Cal, I think it was like 10 or 11 yard line. And they call a timeout. And then the kicker comes onto the field. And I'm like, God damn it. They're going to kick a field goal, which I think would have been the wrong thing to do. And it's not because of my ticket that I had of, you know, Cal plus 4.5. Because if you get a first down, the game is over. So they decide to go for it, and I'm like, great, this is good. And they don't get it. Now I'm thinking, would have preferred a little 3-yard hitch, get the first down, kneel down, we're out of there. So now JKS comes back out. He drops back to pass, and many of you have seen it because it made the social media waves. He throws an interception, and I am standing at him, and I'm screaming, get down! Get down. His teammates are pushing, like, tell him to get down. He runs to the sideline and then cuts it up and untouched into the end zone. Shades of Tyler Shuck's interception for Texas Tech a couple years back against Oregon. And I take the football and I just fire it off to the side of my wall. I was so pissed off. And then almost at the same time, on the other screen, I've got Arkansas, who had a 14-point fourth quarter lead. And that thing slips through their fingertips and they lose to Mississippi State. And I'm like, well, as we like to say, there's a fine line of genius and jerk. We could have had a 4-2 week with ease on this podcast. Instead, we go 2-4. But I love that Chandler Morris post-game talking to Dawn Davenport of ESPN, Adam, when she asked him about the interception, he was like, yeah, I wanted him to get down. I was like, yeah, so did I. And so did a lot of other people. But such is life. That's the way it is. And yes, did I bet Wake Forest immediately upon open? You bet your ass I did. I took 7.5 with Wake Forest. It's down to 6.5. We'll see if we get the sevens again. But I'm going to go down with this Virginia team one way or another. But God, that was painful.
Yeah. And speaking of painful, so college basketball starting here today on November 3rd. No sport delivers more gut-wrenching, miserable bad beats than college basketball. So don't worry. Oh, yeah. I'm sure more is on the way.
Yeah, because, you know, the way I like to bet, too, I love to bet those very popular favorites, right? I like to bet ugly-ass dogs who will find ways to screw it up. So that is the way it played out. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll dive into some of the early week games, a little overreaction or market correction. We got to talk about the Hawaii game as well, as that number has massively moved. Has it moved too much? It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Tim Murray, Adam Burke with you as we join you every early portion of the week. Just a reminder, 3 episodes every week, Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds and Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 Previews, and Thursdays we break down the full card, myself and Matt Newmans. We had our highest numbers ever on YouTube. Much appreciated to all of you. YouTube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. Over 5,000 views this week, which was pretty awesome to see. We've stayed strong here on this forum, Spotify, iTunes, whatever it may be. So continue to give us those 5-star reviews. Continue to subscribe to the podcast. But also, Adam, we got plenty of great stuff going on over at VSiN.com. You mentioned before the break, college basketball is here. We've got a lot of folks, including yourself, Matt Newmans, Hoops Peterson, Wes Reynolds, who love college basketball. So what do we got going over at VSiN.com?
Yeah, another betting market. You know, we get Major League Baseball out of the way after whatever that was in Game 7 of the World Series on Saturday. And
condolences to Blue Jays futures holders. Dave Ross, we love you, brother. That was rough.
That's Dave Ross's fault. Captain America picking a Canadian team? Come on, buddy.
That's true. It's also a word on the street. He's been talking a lot of smack about Notre Dame. So, you know what?
Isn't he a Syracuse fan? He can't talk shit about anybody's team. I mean, CJ Carr has better, like, he has better series than what Joe Filardi had in the last game for Syracuse. I mean, you saw that box score, right?
Oh, yeah.
What was he? He was
four completions or three?
4 for 18 for 39 yards. Like, whatever. And like, apparently they thought that he was good enough to play over the guy, Ricky Collins, who was playing, who had a 6-8 touchdown interception ratio. But anyway, yeah, college basketball over at VSiN.com, college basketball betting guide, still worthwhile, still going to be relevant for a little while because these teams, there's going to be a lot of moving parts for the next several weeks here. But like I said at the top of the show, as I said on the numbers game here, too, it's an inefficient market. It's a good one to jump in on as early as you can. So get involved with college basketball. Obviously, we're doing a lot with it over at VSiN.com. But, you know, I mean, we're actually in a little bit of a lull with betting guides, which is nice just because we had so many in such a short period of time. College football playoff betting guide will be the next one. But daily NBA and NHL picks, golf is picking back up again. UFC is always going on. We cover it all over there at VSiN.com. So VSiN.com/subscribe if you want unfiltered access to everything that we do.
And just a reminder, shout out to our good friends at Rainbow Authentics. They've been a proud sponsor of this podcast all year long. Helped us go out to the islands prior to the start of the season. Had a couple of live broadcasts. And if you want to help out Hawaii Athletics, also get yourself some game-used apparel, autographs, maybe a word on the street, some Tokyo Toe merchandise as he set the school record for most consecutive field goals made. You can check him out, rainbowauthentics.com. Every item tells a story, whether it's that game-worn jersey, signed ball, or unique collectibles. You'll be helping them out. So beyond the memorabilia, they're committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student-athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. You always see me wearing this hat. They've got other gear coming out soon, so check them out, rainbowauthentics.com. Mahalo to our friends over at Rainbow Authentics. That leads us into a little overreaction or market correction. And shout out to Matt Grill and the team over at DraftKings. They put up 10 to 12 games every week on Wednesday. And I've been charting them, if you want to check it out on Twitter, at one Tim Murray. And they put up the San Diego State-Hawaii game. They gave us a look-ahead line, actionable look-ahead lines. And I guess it was too short, Adam. The look-ahead line was 2.5 in favor of the Aztecs. And after this weekend, it is now 7. And on Monday, this thing got absolutely bulldozed all the way up to, there was a 7. Actually, there still is a 7.5 at FanDuel right now as we record in favor of San Diego State. So, yes, we'll get into, you know, how well Hawaii has done at home under Timmy Chang in just a moment. But, you know, statistically speaking, as you like to look at things kind of more numerically, man, this is a big move on San Diego State.
Yeah, it really is. So I was against San Diego State last week. I had Wyoming plus 10.5. I correctly assumed it would be a very low scoring game and figured 10.5 point head start would be the way to go. As it turns out, Wyoming was only able to score 7 points. But one of the big reasons why. So San Diego State, according to Brian Fermo over at BCF Toys, they have played the 133rd ranked slate of opposing offenses this season. So, yeah, their defense is really good, but also they haven't played any good offenses, really. So they get a pretty good one this week in Hawaii.
You know, I watched the whole game on Saturday night, and Hawaii, it was one of those games, too, where I took the 2.5 with Hawaii. I kind of didn't love the bet. And as watching that game, the defense just got absolutely shredded. And yeah, it makes sense because San Jose State is this spread and shred offense. Danny Scudero, I don't know. I think he's a sophomore. That dude is definitely not going to be at San Jose State next year. I mean, you talk about super productive wide receivers. He was at FCS Sac State last year. He's got over 1,000 receiving yards. He couldn't be stopped by this Hawaii defense. He went for 215 yards. But you pointed that out, right? Mike Alejado in this Hawaii offense is humming right now. And they're on the island underneath Timmy Chang. I believe the number is 18-6 ATS at home. They are the best cover team since 2021 at home in college football, them in Alabama. And, you know, offensively, you mentioned it, right? Micah Alejado, since he's gotten healthy, 457, 413, 301, 367 through the air, 12-2 touchdown to interception ratio over the last four games. This will be the best defense that Hawaii has faced, but San Diego State, let me point this out. I mentioned this off air, so let's bring it to the light here. These are some of the passing offenses that San Diego State has faced in recent games. Northern Illinois, 134th. Colorado State, 104th. Nevada, 125th. Fresno State, 112th. Wyoming, 102. So you kind of have a clash here of a really, really good defense going up against a really, really potent offense. And then the question is, you know, will San Diego State be able to score enough against a defense that certainly looks leaky at times, like the Rainbow Warriors?
Well, and something else, too, you know, even in that game against Fresno State, EJ Warner didn't play that game. It was Carson Conklin who got the start, I believe his first career start in that game. So 20 of 42, 182, two picks. So San Diego State, you know, I mean, not only have they been playing some bad passing offenses, but, you know, they've also kind of run into some situations where, you know, teams are kind of changing quarterbacks, right? Jackson Brousseau was getting the start for Colorado State. Braden Fowler-Nicolosi had been benched. And of course, you know, they fired Jay Norvell shortly thereafter. So they've gotten pretty fortunate, too, with the quarterbacks that they've played, either not facing the starter at the beginning of the season or, you know, a starter that's been hurt, getting replaced, stuff like that. And also Jaden Denegal, the quarterback for San Diego State, Walker Egitt, threw for about a third of the passing yards that he has for the season in the game against this Hawaii defense last time out. 458 on just 20 completions, by the way. Denegal's got under 1,500 passing yards for the season. So this should be an easier test for the Hawaii defense. Like you said, they're not going to get spread out by San Diego State. Maybe they're going to have to step up a little bit more in the physical department, you know, in the trenches, specifically on the defensive line. But San Diego State's offense is nothing special at all whatsoever. So, I don't know, man. I think 7's too much. I like Hawaii again.
Yeah, and if you do have access to FanDuel, 7.5 minus 20, and that is a bet that I made, so I'm in on Hawaii. Plus the 7.5, I know, shocker, I bet Hawaii yet again this year. But 18-6-1 ATS at home, as mentioned, and they did find a way a couple weeks back to cover that game against Fresno State. But sticking with the market correction or overreaction bit that we do every Monday, what about Indiana? This thing, look ahead, was 11.5. It's now 15.5. I imagine you watched a lot of Penn State, Ohio State, being an Ohio State guy. I just, at this point, man, I can't bet against Indiana. I know that's something you never should say. I tried to do it a couple times last year during the season. Didn't work out all that well until the playoff. This isn't the spot for me to bet against Indiana. You know, I thought maybe last week was going to be a tricky spot. I stayed off. I'm proud of myself for doing that. I don't know you can make numbers high enough for this Indiana team right now. They are absolutely bulldozing teams, and Cignetti is a bully in a good way. He just covers numbers.
Yeah, this one's too high at this point. But like you said, I mean, you're not really excited going out there and betting against Indiana. You know, I mean, Penn State is still a talented team. They seem to be just kind of like the old one arm man in the boat thing, just kind of going in circles. They don't really seem to have a direction in mind. They don't really know where they're actually going, but they're still a talented team, right? I mean, Ohio State's leveraging their pass offense so well at this point in time that they're just surgically efficient. Indiana could very well do the same thing, but I'm probably going to bet this at some point. I'll have to see how my college basketball week goes first, and then maybe I'll do something with this one, because it's not like I have to rush into making a bet on this game. Hell, it may touch 16, 17.
It might not stop.
Yeah, it may not stop. I mean, you know, I will say this, right? Penn State should at least still have enough on defense to be more equipped to slow Indiana down than anybody else really has been. We didn't really see it against Ohio State, I guess, so maybe not. But, God, it's too high, man, right? I mean, Indiana, dating back to 1993, which is what the Killer Sports database goes back to, Indiana has never been favored over Penn State. And 2 years ago, Penn State was a 31-point favorite in this game. What an incredible turnaround, really, in a year, let alone in 2 years, for Kurt Cignetti with that Hoosiers program.
That is just unbelievable to think about where they were 2 years ago before Cignetti got there, and now they're laying north of two touchdowns at Penn State. I mean, this thing is a road game, and they're laying two. And you can't blame them. No. You can't blame them. Are we getting to the point? And you 2 weeks ago, I got to give you credit. You said Julian Sayin was the rightful favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. He's at plus 175 right now. Mendoza's plus 240. Simpson took a little bit of a step back to plus 450. Are we getting to the point where 12-0 Ohio State, 12-0 Indiana, it's a Heisman Trophy off in Indianapolis the first weekend of December?
Yeah, I think it very well could be. I mean, you know, Ohio State did get a little bit of a decent running effort out of Bo Jackson in the game against Penn State. But I told you this. They've realized they have to throw the football. Julian Sayin takes such good care of it. Jeremiah Smith's always open. Carnell Tate's always open. I mean, the kid's completing 81% of his passes so far in the season. And look, I get it, right? You can poke holes in Ohio State's strength of schedule now because Penn State sucks. Illinois was way overrated coming into the season. Wisconsin is, I don't even know how to describe them. Washington's a pretty good team. You know, Washington played well in that game up in Seattle. They just couldn't score, which is kind of a thing against Ohio State's defense. But Purdue, UCLA, Rutgers, like, there's no slowing Julian Sayin down in those three games. And again, Ohio State damn well better beat Michigan this year. Should have did it last year, you know. But I mean, yeah, at this point, like, the Big Ten championship game could very well be a Heisman Trophy game. I agree with that, because one of those two quarterbacks has to have a signature moment. And I think Julian Sayin has to, because Ohio State's running game just isn't good enough.
I can't wait for that game. Hopefully it is 12-0 versus 12-0. Could very well be 1 versus 2. Wouldn't be surprised if it's 1-2 on Tuesday night. I think Indiana probably will be the number one team in the country. I'm not saying I'm confident in that. I don't think it really matters. It'll all figure itself out. But yeah, Alabama, they have a couple more opportunities, right? They've got the big one this weekend against LSU, which we can dive into, even though it certainly isn't as big as we thought it was going to be. Oklahoma, that looks better. If Ty Simpson is able to put up big numbers against Oklahoma in 2 weeks, I think that'll be a pretty impressive thing, especially what we saw from that Oklahoma defense over the weekend against Tennessee. But a couple more games I just want to get your thought on, and you do have your power ratings article up over at VSiN.com. What do we do with Nebraska now? Nebraska was a 4.5-point favorite in the look ahead against UCLA. Dylan Raiola now lost for the season with a broken fibula. They are now a 3-point underdog at UCLA, and Humans let me know when I told him I bet Nebraska over 7.5 wins. He goes, you know, they haven't gone over their win total since 2017. And it looks like, Adam, it will be another year under the win total for the Corn. Hard to envision this team winning two more games, especially with Raiola sidelined.
Yeah, this is one that's kind of tough, right? Because, I mean, he's got decent numbers, 2,000 passing yards, 18-6 touchdown interception ratio, 72% completion rate. Did take the 27 sacks, but yeah, I mean, I don't really know, like, how to quantify the downgrade from him to the backup. I made it 3.5 points for right now, but seeing this line really run out on the UCLA side tells me that I'm low on this one. Part of this, too, may also just be people like UCLA, because outside of getting humiliated by Indiana, they played really, really well, you know, with Deshaun Foster fired, you know, kind of getting that fired coach bump. So, yeah, I mean, I made a 3.5-point adjustment, but it's probably more than that. And I guess we'll kind of find out this week how much it really should be.
Yeah, you got to ask yourself the question, right? Is this a spot where Nebraska with a backup quarterback, are they the same rating as Maryland? Because Maryland closed as a 3-point underdog at UCLA, and Nebraska's a 3-point underdog right now at UCLA. So I don't know. I think it might be a little bit too abrupt. I mean, to move it 7.5 points for Dylan Raiola seems a bit aggressive. UCLA is coming off a bye, so that's beneficial. You don't really know what to expect from a backup quarterback, but I don't know. It does feel pretty aggressive, that move. So we'll see if the market was accurate on that one. You mentioned it earlier, so let's get to it. Iowa State, they were in the look ahead 3-point underdog at TCU. They're now a 6.5-point dog at TCU. You mentioned it. What is going on with Iowa State? They've dealt with a ton of injuries this year. You lose, I mean, the box score in that game against Arizona State. Jeff Sims, what magical portal did he go into? Because he ran for 228 yards in that game.
I mean, he's a 30-year-old man playing against college kids. Like, I mean, what do you expect? 228 rushing yards.
I mean, he played against Utah,
yards.
And they lost by a billion.
That's true. Yeah, that was fun, because I was on Arizona State in that game, and then I found out Sam Levitt wasn't going to play. The injuries have not helped Iowa State, but also, like, I don't know. I mean, Rocco Becht is getting worse, right? Like, I realized, you know, he lost two big wide receivers from last year, has lost wide receivers each of the 3 years that he's been starting. But he seems to be regressing. And that's a problem for Iowa State, because defensively they're not nearly as good as they were earlier on in the Matt Campbell years.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. All right, two more games.
What is this, Jeff Sims' seventh year of college football?
I don't know, 11th? I mean, a lot of people go to college for 7 years.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
LSU is 10.5-point dogs at Bama. So we have the fired coach bump that I've talked about here on the show. It is now 7-2 ATS after the kneel down by Gunnar Stockton at the goal line. So teams that have fired their head coaches the game following, it's happened 9 times already this year. You've got two situations this weekend. You've got Auburn, after they fired Hugh Freeze. They're a 7-point dog at Vanderbilt. And then you've got LSU as a 10.5-point dog at Alabama. Either one of those teams of interest to you as they head into a week with a new interim face on the sideline?
Who did Auburn promote to be the
DJ
interim?
DJ Durkin.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
who has head coaching experience. It did not end well, to say the least, in Maryland. But he does have head coaching experience. I don't know, man. That one's going to be, of the two, I think that's the one I'm going to be staring at a little bit more. You know, I mentioned teams that have thrived at home. So I looked it up just to make sure I was accurate. 2022, that's when Timmy Chang got hired to Hawaii. So they're 18-6-1 ATS at home. The only other team with the same mark, Alabama. So Alabama has thrived at home. Both teams are coming off a bye, so there's no rest advantage one way or the other. I think if I, of the two, I'd probably have to look at Auburn instead of LSU. But I don't know if I'll end up with Auburn on the card.
That's right. I remember the DJ Durkin thing now because I saw a tweet and it was somebody saying like, well, we only went 1 week without a coach in the SEC who's killed a kid. So now I remember that it's DJ Durkin. His tenure at Maryland did not end well. I would actually say LSU, I think, just because, you know, Garrett Nussmeier, we've talked about this several times over already. Garrett Nussmeier was second, third on the Heisman board coming into the season. And I think it was pretty clear, you know, kind of seeing the sideline interactions and all of that. He didn't see eye to eye with Brian Kelly. And I think that was probably bubbling for a while. Not having Kelly there now, having a guy in Frank Wilson who, you know, has been around a long time. You know, I think that's something that kind of helps, too. You kind of, you know, when you have an interim and it's somebody who's kind of paid their dues and all of that, you know, somebody who's been a football lifer, like, I think the team kind of responds to that. I kind of like LSU getting double digits here. I mean, Alabama's look good. Kalen DeBoer's kind of in rhythm, it seems like. And Ty Simpson's great. But I feel like a team as talented as LSU kind of has a new lease on life where I don't really know how talented Auburn actually is. And their quarterback situation is far worse than having Garrett Nussmeier out there.
All right, a couple games, and you wrote up a couple on your column. The seven, I think, has been scooped. We'll see if it comes back. I know they got their butt kicked this past weekend, but you've got Army coming off the Air Force win. Temple's already faced the triple option and should have won that game against Navy earlier this year. I think you and I are aligned here. We like the Owls coming off an ugly loss. Army coming off the Air Force win. I think Temple might win this game outright because they've faced the triple already. It's not going to come as a surprise. And, you know, you and I think are aligned here. Casey Keeler's a good coach, and they got their ass kicked last week. I think you'll get a pretty inspired effort. I like Temple here. Hopefully we get the seven back. I took seven at Circa on Sunday. But I think Temple is more than live at West Point on Saturday.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah, I took the seven as well. There's still a rogue seven in town. So if you are a Vegas resident, you may find one out there. But yeah, I mean, I think Casey Keeler, like you said, really good coach. He's already faced the option once, and he faced the option a lot, you know, when he was a coach in the FCS ranks, because there's more teams that run it down there. So yeah, I know that they run the exact same thing more or less, but Army really struggled against an Air Force defense that is beyond horrific. I mean, they had the one deep passing play that kind of won them the game for the most part, but like, they didn't do much of anything against an Air Force defense that has given up like 8 yards per play this season. So, yeah, I think Temple is very much live there. And honestly, like, if you had told me before, first of all, Temple needs to win this game because they have Tulane and North Texas next. If they want to be sick, you know, bowl eligible and get their sixth win, they better win this one because they're probably not going to beat Tulane or North Texas. So there's also that carrot kind of dangling there for them as well. But I think Casey Keeler is a really good head coach. So he gets his team into a bowl game in year one. That's a hell of an achievement. By the way, his quarterback, Evan Simon, 21-1 touchdown interception ratio this year.
I think this is going to be the fourth time I've bet Temple this year. I bet him against Georgia Tech. No, I bet him first against Oklahoma in that weird spot after Oklahoma beat Michigan. That didn't work out well. They got a magical cover against Georgia Tech, and then I bet him against Navy when they were a massive home dog and they should have won the game. So, yes, this will be the fourth time I've bet Temple, so hopefully we keep that going well. You know, just looking at your updated power ratings, I can't believe we're here. It's been a roller coaster. One of the teams you've upgraded the most, Coastal Carolina, man. Like, I wrote this team off earlier this year. Like, this team's a disaster. They pummeled Marshall as a pretty significant dog over the weekend. And don't look now, but Coastal Carolina is actually playing some half-decent football.
Yeah, they really are. You know, I mean, we'll see what they do here. They got James Madison in the final game where I don't think James Madison's going to be your group of five college football playoff team. But
odds are shrinking.
If Coastal was to beat them, they would play in the conference championship game. This is still the only conference that has divisions. But those are the top two teams in the East right now. And I thought this Coastal Carolina team was going to be terrible. I expected Tim Beck to get fired this year. Doesn't look like that's going to happen now. I don't know what has gone on. And the weird thing is, too, so they went to Samari Collier as the starting quarterback. He's completed 46% of his passes. 46%. And yet they're like winning games and dropping 40 burgers on teams. So I don't know what the hell's going on down there. But all of a sudden, they're a much improved team. Laying over a touchdown against a Georgia State team that is, I'm quickly finding out, like a bottom five power rated team by the market.
So we talked San Diego State. You upgraded them 3.5 points. A couple of your downgrades have to do with quarterback injuries. Boise State down 4.5 with Maddox Madsen. Nebraska down 3.5, as we alluded to, with Dylan Raiola. Colorado is a absolute dumpster fire right now. And I mean, I guess we should have seen this coming, you know, with the loss of the Heisman Trophy winner, the loss of an NFL quarterback. There was other NFL talent on that roster. Deion Sanders doesn't know what to do with his quarterbacks. And, you know, it's funny when I look at home dogs, you know, my affinity for home dogs. I was like, I don't know. Arizona's not that great. Thankfully, I stayed off because that thing was over before it started. They are terrible right now.
Not only are they terrible, they also beat Iowa State recently. So kind of what we were talking about with Iowa State of like...
And should have beaten BYU.
Yes. Yes, they should have. I do wonder, is there maybe some quit in this team now? Like,
By the way, yeah, and oh, by the way, don't worry. You just have to travel to Morgantown this upcoming weekend.
Yeah, who just beat a really good Houston team. Yeah, this is... I'm going to have to lay it with West Virginia here. I don't like it. Obviously, I don't love laying numbers with teams that are not particularly good. But
and coming off huge wins.
And yeah, but like we all know that Deion's done, right? Like he's just going to have to be the health concerns. Clearly, he's not enjoying this at all. Blocked the player interviews for the media after the game. So he doesn't really want anything being said, anything going out there. I don't know. This is a team that's given up 105 points in the last 2 weeks, like, or the last two games. I don't know how they could possibly rally here, especially to go out to Morgantown and play a, you know, noon Eastern time kickoff. Like, and again, Deion's got to be done, right? Like, the health issues seem like they're pretty serious that he's going through.
Yeah, you have that. I mean, I know he's got a pretty decent contract, so from a financial standpoint, but I mean, Deion Sanders got a lot of money.
Yeah, he doesn't need the money.
He'll be doing those Aflac commercials after he's coaching. He ain't going anywhere there.
That's one of those where they come to a settlement and they mutually agree to part ways or something.
Yeah, I mean, what a ride it has been. They did announce that the prized freshman, Julian Lewis, who probably should have been starting already, he will be the starter. I mean, their quarterback situation has been a nightmare all year long. All right, Adam, let's hit some weekday games. We do have MACtion, a conference where, I mean, you can try to make sense of it. I can't. Miami of Ohio is unbeaten in conference play, but they're catching 3.5 against Ohio. Akron, is that your alma mater, Akron?
Yes, sir. Go Zips.
Double-digit favorite against UMass. You got a little nugget on that.
Fear the Rue. So we'll see if this line holds. I don't know that it's going to. It's 10.5 in some places. It's 11 at Circa out here in Vegas. But if this closes 11 or higher, it'd be the first time since 2017 that Akron's been 11-point or more favorite against an FBS team. And it was Kent State that they were favored against. I'm not a trends guy. I don't care about trends. There's too much turnover in college football. Programs change, coaches change, all those different types of things. But I will say this. Akron last 37 games laying 11 or more, 11-25-1 against the spread. I think there's two things to take away from this. The first one is UMass is god awful.
They're the worst team in college football, right?
By far. Yeah. I mean, I have this number pretty dead on. I have Akron minus 11. UMass is power rated like 33.5 for me or something like that, which is about as low as it gets. So they're horrible, right? Like they have so many injuries that their head coach was playing scout team on defense prior to last week's game. So like that's how beaten up they are, and they're not good to begin with.
There's 136 FBS teams. Jeff Sagarin does FBS and FCS.
Yeah.
He has them at 226.
That sounds about right. I mean, I have UMass a 5.5 point dog on a neutral to everybody in Division I FBS. Charlotte would be a 5.5 point favorite over them for me.
Let's get Sam Houston versus UMass. We need it.
I would have Sam Houston 8.5 point favorite on a neutral.
Oh my God.
Which is probably too high. But yeah, so I just, yeah. UMass is horrific. Honestly, like, Akron, for being the butt of a lot of jokes, as they really should be, they can't make a bowl game because of their low academic progress rate scores. So their bowl game is next week when they play Kent State, who just made Mark Carney their full-time head coach. And obviously the battle for the wagon wheel is huge. But that's their bowl game. Honestly, like, Bowling Green's awful. I might take Bowling Green on November 18th because Akron, their last game is November 18th. They can't make a bowl. Even if they ran the table, they can't make a bowl. And they have a bye the last week of the regular season. I don't know who the hell designed that schedule. But, yeah, so Akron, I mean, big expectations this week. And then their bowl game next week. So, Maction, alive and well, my friend.
Wednesday night, if you want to fade Jason Candle as a double-digit favorite, you get another opportunity. Toledo laying 2 touchdowns against Northern Illinois. I believe the number is 10 losses as a double-digit favorite. I mean, this NIU team, I've bet on them twice. No, once. It was the game against San Diego State, 6-3. What a barn burner that game was. Can you do it? Can you take the points with the boys from DeKalb?
So, 18 times that Toledo's lost outright as a favorite since 2021, thanks to our pal Brad Powers for that stat. 12 of them as a favorite of 7 or more. So, I mean, they could. You know what's sad about this game, though? This was kind of the game that brought Maction into the mainstream. What, like 2009? Something like that? 2009, 2010. Toledo and Northern Illinois played like that 66-63 game or whatever it was. And now we're looking at a total of 41.5 with a 2-touchdown favorite. Sad how this rivalry has fallen. Northern Illinois' defense is okay. Their offense is about the worst thing I've ever seen in college football. So
it's really bad.
But yeah, laying 14 with Toledo when Jason Candle never blows out anybody, I couldn't do it.
So since 2021, Toledo as an underdog is 8-1 against the spread. That's the best cover percentage in college football. As a favorite in that time stretch, 23-30 against the spread.
That sounds about right.
Oh, man.
You know what, though? I never thought I would say this. Never thought I would say this, but I'm going to say it. I am betting Kent State on the money line against Ball State. Ball State's terrible. Kent State actually
fight.
Drew DeShields looks pretty good, honestly, at the quarterback position. And the team seemed really, really thrilled when they dropped the interim tag for Mark Carney's name. I mean, to get 3 wins out of this team is one hell of a coaching job. To get 4 and have a shot at bowl eligibility, like, I mean, coach of the year type stuff here for Mark Carney. I'm taking them to beat Ball State this week. I have to.
All right, there you go. Maction. We'll talk more about these games as the week goes on, but I did want to get your thoughts on the Friday night game, Tulane and Memphis. It does feel to me like a really good buy low opportunity. This line seems very inflated. Now, it is worth noting, where are the minds of the Green Wave players right now? With John Summerall being basically discussed in every coaching availability. But Tulane is catching 6.5 at Memphis on Friday night. And Tulane gets worked by UTSA on Thursday. Memphis, credit to them, They beat South Florida. No letdown against Rice. This number is high, man. 6.5 seems really high. I'm going to see if we get a 7. That'll be my buy point here on Tulane. Might still take 6.5. Look, the American is kind of funky this year, and I don't think Memphis should be laying 6.5 against Tulane.
I have it power rated 8.5. Ooh, actually. Okay. So this is one where it'd be Memphis or nothing for me. I mean, part of it is it took so long for me to come around on Brendan Lewis that when I finally did, I made a pretty significant upgrade to the Memphis side of things. For Tulane, I mean, there were so many games early on in the season where Jake Retzlaff was their leading rusher. And like, he's not really your, you know, prototypical dual threat type of guy. But there were so many games where he was leading this team in rushing yards. I don't think this ground game is very good for Tulane. I mean, they don't have a single back with more than 328 yards on the season. And Retzlaff's not really that great of a passer. I think Memphis is probably the side here. But I will say, you know, John Sumrall's being talked about a lot, and deservedly so. You know, he's really good at Troy. He's been good here at Tulane, too. How come no one's talking about Ryan Silverfield at Memphis? Like, the job he's doing, I know they had the super strange loss to UAB that felt like it kind of derailed their season a little bit. But, man, I mean, that's a guy that, like, he's going to have to start being talked about for some of these jobs, right?
Yeah, I think he'll be up. I mean, there's so many jobs available, too.
And you know, plenty more yet to come.
Yeah, exactly. You know, South Florida right now, by the way, is the favorite to make it to the college football playoff out of the G5, but it is a cluster. You've got South Florida plus 230, North Texas, who got run by South Florida, plus 250, Memphis plus 350, James Madison 4-1, and then you start to get a little bit further down after that. Tulane's 12-1, San Diego State 13-1, Navy. You know, one of our APs, Danny Smith, tweeted me a couple weeks ago or last week before Navy played North Texas and said 10-1 is way too short for Navy. I mean, look at their schedule. It's North Texas, who lost by 2 touchdowns. Then it's Notre Dame. Then it's South Florida. Then it's Memphis. It's like, good God. I mean, it was a great start for Navy. They're going to be an underdog in every game until Army. That one could be that one. Hey, worth noting, the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy will be officially on the line for Army-Navy, with Air Force losing to both Army and Navy so far this year. All right, any parting words here, Adam, as we wrap things up?
Thrilled about Maction, of course. That conference is so terrible that, like, you're flipping coins, man. Like, all the teams are bad, it seems like. But I will say, you mentioned it, Miami's 4-0 in conference play. And they're over a field goal dog to Ohio. Like, the line kind of tells a story type of thing there, I think, yeah. Where the market's been pretty low on Ohio throughout most of the season anyway. I think the line's kind of pointing us in a certain direction there. Like, everyone faded Buffalo coming into the season, and Buffalo is tied for second in this conference. By the way, the one thing I will say that I'm very happy about, I was very exposed on Western Michigan over their season win total. And when they started as poorly as they did, I was like, oh, shit, this is not going to be a good bet. Like, they weren't supposed to win any of those first three games, but they didn't really look great in two of them. Did play with North Texas, which, I mean, that performance is, you know, aging better. But they may actually win 7 games or so this year. So I'm happy about that one. But this conference, man, I'm telling you, like, if you thought watching Conference USA football on Tuesdays and Wednesdays was bad, just wait until you see the Mac.
Can't wait. Return of the Mac, always great. I'll leave you with this quote from the always cheerful Lincoln Riley after beating Nebraska. Quote, "Now, thankfully, the Big Ten took care of us schedule-wise, and we'll get home at 3 o'clock and turn this thing over to play on Friday. It is what it is." Keep complaining, Lincoln. That is
Northwestern plus 14.5.
I wouldn't hate it. Wouldn't hate it there. We'll see. But they did get a nice win there on Saturday. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. That's Adam Burke. Make sure you read everything that he puts up over at vsin.com. We'll be back later this week, Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds. Brett Ciancia will jump on as well as our Thursday week 11 breakdown with Matt Humans. Thanks to Wyatt Tomchek, Ryan Hunter, the producers of this podcast. I'm Tim Murray. This has been the vsin College Football Betting Podcast. We'll be right back.